Ultimately, our relationship to God is not first and foremost due to fear of his power, but rather an embrace of his love. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, Episode 159, Interoffice Memos and Letters of Love. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
We begin this special pre-Shavuot episode of 10-Minute Mitzvah with a striking reference to the Haftarah that we read this past Shabbat, a reference to the prophetic passage that appears in an interoffice governmental memo sent by the Israeli Prime Minister in 1953. As I described in my Ten Commandments series, the prophet Hosea, like many other prophets, describes the relationship between biblical Israel and the Almighty as a marriage. God is the divine husband of his spouse, which is the people. Thus, Israel's embrace of idolatry is further depicted by the prophets as an act of marital betrayal. It's with this in mind that we can appreciate, as I believe I further noted in my lectures, the spacing of the Ten Commandments according to the traditional Jewish depiction upon the Luchot, the tablets, 5 on one, 5 on the other. This means that Commandments 1 and 2, I am the Lord thy God, and thou shalt not have any other gods before me, are inscribed in parallel to Commandments 6 and 7. Also, mitzvot, lo tirtzach, thou shalt not murder, and lo tinaf, thou shalt not commit adultery. These four mitzvot, some of which we have discussed in earlier episodes and some of which we have not, are linked to one another in an understandable way. The prohibition against murder parallels I am the Lord thy God because the inviolability of human life, as Genesis states, is founded on the fact that every human being is created in God's image. Meanwhile, the parallel between Commandment 2 and Commandment 6, thou shalt not have any other gods before me, and thou shalt not commit adultery, emphasizes the fact that Israel's relationship with the Almighty is one of a marriage, and that having other gods, worshiping other gods, is a betrayal of the marital covenant between the divine and his covenantal spouse. Hence the words of Isaiah, famous words, at the conclusion of this past Shabbat's Haftarah, describing the enduring love that God has for biblical Israel. Varastich li liolam, and I will betroth you to me forever. And I will betroth you to me in righteousness and justice, in loving loyalty and faith. Vidatem ki ani Hashem, and you will know that I am the Lord. All this sets up, as I mentioned, a prophetic pun by Hosea. The standard term in biblical Hebrew for husband is Baal, but Baal, in very different contexts, has other connotations. Baal is, of course, the name of an idol that many Israelites embraced. And the word Baal, in monetary context, refers to ownership or power. God, through Hosea, speaking of the restoration of his relationship with Israel, says, Bayomahu tikri'i ishi velo tikri'i li ba'ali. On this day you will call me, not my Baal, but ishi, my man, meaning my husband, utilizing a different Hebrew word for husband, ish, as in ish and isha, man and woman, husband and wife. The point, as Rabbi Sachs has explained, is that ultimately our relationship to God is not first and foremost due to fear of his power, but rather an embrace of his love. This is referenced in a striking memo sent by David Ben-Gurion to the Sar Ha'otzer, the Minister of the Treasury, in an inter-office bulletin regarding tax forms. On the form where the name of husband and wife were to be written, the Hebrew word on the form for my husband was Ba'ali, my Baal. Referencing the verse in Hosea, Ben-Gurion suggested that it be changed to Ishi. It is perhaps surprising for a prophetic citation to suddenly appear in an inter-office memo about legal terms on tax forms. But, I realized, this inspires us to ponder a larger point. In a striking Agadah, an incredible Talmudic tale, Moses is described as ascending to heaven to receive the Torah from God, and is surprised to find the Almighty himself sitting as a scribe would, attaching crowns to the letters, engaging, in other words, in exquisite calligraphy. And he asked the Almighty, Mima keval yadcha, who's forcing you to do this? Meaning, why do you need to add something special? The letters are already written. The information is already on the parchment. To this, the Almighty replies that there will come a time when a man named Akiva will study carefully each letter and learn something new, learn an abundance of new insights from every crown being applied. The point, in other words, is that the Torah is not merely an inter-office memo from the Almighty to us. A memo goes from boss to employee. It is obeyed because of power or fear. But the Torah is inscribed calligraphically in order to embody the fact that it is God's letter of love, which is why Jews, in turn, have lavished love on it for so many centuries. It is no coincidence that the man described by the Talmud as focusing so much affectionate attention on the Torah, Akiva, was a man who, as the Talmud describes, had his own life transformed by love, beginning as a simple shepherd until a woman, Rachel, saw something significant within him and inspired him to become the giant that he became. Love allows us to see what is often missed, and Rabbi Akiva, awakened to Torah by the loving support of another, turned in love to the letter of God, to every calligraphic crown, in order to see what might have been missed. How do we see the Torah? To celebrate its bestowal to us this Shavuot is to understand that it is more than turgid text. It is a letter of love. It is more than memo from on high. And we celebrate by lavishing love on it once again. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together later this week. Wishing you a Chag Sameach. Signing off.